Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading Canto 5, Chapter 10. Maharaj Rahogana meets Jad Bharat. We're going to read verses 3, 4, 5, and 6. And it's all prose, so I'll just read the translation. Text 3. When the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahogana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. Purport. According to political science, a king sometimes tries to pacify his subordinates, sometimes chastises them, sometimes derides them, and sometimes rewards them. In this way, the king rules his subordinates. The bearers of the palanquin could understand that the king was angry and that he would chastise them. This is Canto 5. The same four modes of ruling are mentioned when Sanda and Amarka were teaching Prahlad. He wasn't interested at all in political science, how to become a king and rule your subjects by these four. But they're standard Vedic culture, likely outside of Vedic culture. Politicians try to control people in different ways, these four standard ways. So the four: pacify, chastise, deride. Sounds like the recent election. And sometimes reward. Text number 4. This is the palanquin carriers to the king saying, "Oh Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire, but this man who has been recently engaged to work with us cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him." Purport. Interesting purport. The other palanquin carriers were Shudras, whereas Jad Bharata was not only a high caste Brahmana, but also a great devotee. Shudras do not sympathize with other living beings, but a Vaishnava cannot act like a Shudra. Whenever a Shudra and a Brahmana Vaishnava are combined, there will certainly be imbalance in the execution of duties. Doesn't mean they'll have a conflict, but just imbalance in the execution of duties. The Shudras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground, but Jad Bharat could not act like a Shudra, and therefore difficulty arose. Text 5. King Rahogana could understand the speeches given by the carriers who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry, although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced. His anger arose due to his innate nature as a king. Actually, King Rahogana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jad Bharata, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. the distinction between Rajoguna and Sattva Guna is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion, and therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Jad Bharata, despite all kinds of injustice, endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, his Brahma Teja, his Brahman effulgence, was indistinctly visible in his person. And text 6. King Rahugana told Jad Bharat, this is, by the way, sarcastic, because he's saying you're not this and you're not that, but he is this and he is that. How troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you've carried this palanquin alone. He hasn't carried it alone. Without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. They just got started. Besides that, due to your old age, he's not old, very young, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I can see that you're not very firm nor very strong and stout. He's very firm, strong, and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? This doesn't seem to be one of the four. It's like another category. It's a sarcasm. So it's a sarcastic chastisement. In this way, the king criticized Jada Bharata with sarcastic words. Yet, despite being criticized in this way, Jada Bharata had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, or thin, nor had he anything to do with the lump of matter, a combination of five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, Aham Brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king. So there it is, chastisement or criticism. The second one. Without saying anything, Jad Bharata continued carrying the palanquin as before. Purport. Jada Bharata was completely liberated. He did not even care when the dacoits attempted to kill his body, semicolon. He knew that he certainly was not the body. Even if the body were killed, he would not have cared, for he was thoroughly convinced of the proposition found in Bhagavad Gita 2:20. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. He knew that he could not be killed, even if his body were killed. Although he did not protest, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his agent, could not tolerate the injustice of the dacoits, semicolon, therefore he was saved by the mercy of Krishna, and the dacoits were killed. In this case, while carrying the palanquin, he also knew that he was not the body. This body was very strong and stout, in sound condition, and quite competent to carry the palanquin. Due to his being freed from the bodily conception, the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. If you don't like being criticized, there's a very good solution. Just become self-realized. And if you don't mind being agitated and disturbed and troubled and angry, and stay in the bodily conception, it's very suited for that condition. It's like a verse by Rupa Goswami where he says, if you at all care about family affection, don't go to Keshikan. Because there's a young boy playing on his flute, and he'll steal your mind away, and all your affection for the family and bodily relations is just go away. So if you all care about those things, don't go to Keshikan. So, similarly, if you like this anger and attachment and frustration and all those yummy feelings, don't at all go beyond the bodily conception of life. Because if you do, you won't have all those feelings anymore. The body is created according to one's karma, and material nature supplies the ingredients for the development of a certain type of body. The soul the body covers is different from the bodily construction, semicolon, therefore, anything favorable or mischievous done to the body does not affect the spirit soul. The Vedic injunction is asango hyayam purushaha. The spirit soul is always unaffected by material arrangements. Soul is always unaffected by material arrangements. Philosophy, isn't it? It's practical. The philosophy is aham brahmasmi. I am in the category of Brahman, and I don't belong to the category of matter. So whatever goes on in the category of matter, it can't touch me. It's not even like sticks and stones may break my bones, but you've heard this one? But names will never hurt me. You heard that before? Chakra, you've heard that one before? Yeah. But this is, you know, this is saying the names will never hurt me, but it, you know, beyond that is even the sticks and stones can't hurt me. Now, both take a degree. I know some people, they're quite tolerant in terms of bodily discomfort, and they're quite intolerant of mental discomfort. And you know, we have both. We have a gross and a subtle body. Mentioned specifically is the mode of passion rests within the mind. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, it rests in three places. Lust. So, the mind, but the mind gets agitated first before then, you know, the rest of the body. And when the mind gets agitated, the whole body experiences whatever that agitation is. Anger or lust or greed or whatever. And then commonly actions. It's something like the science found in Nectar Devotion about all kinds of things, you know, like a clenched fist is preceded by a feeling, bhava. And then, so in transcendental bhava, then all kinds of behaviors are done because of the internal on the soul platform ecstasy. And if one isn't on that platform of consciousness, then there's other kinds of bhavas, like this, Ishwara bhava. The king has Ishwara bhava. He considers himself the Ishwara. And that's what the next verse is saying. And it's that's the bodily conception, it's not the transcendental conception. So for a brahmana, then a brahmana is fixed in knowledge of Brahman, and in that fixed position of the knowledge of Brahman, they're not only try to tolerate, they're just by nature tolerant. They're not disturbed. Not trying to be undisturbed. They're undisturbed. And they're undisturbed because the mind, rather than being filled with passion, like the king, the mind is filled with the spiritual conception of self. Because the mind carries different conceptions. So if the conception is, I'm the controller, and someone's challenging that, it's, you know, the chivalrous spirit of a king is activated, or the controlling spirit of the king is activated, passion. So how does it work if you become a devotee and you're supposed to be a king, like great Vaishnava kings, Ambarish Maharaj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, or Parikshit Maharaj, or great kings? Prahlad also became a great king. Dhruva Maharaj became a great king. So there's grades of kings, and even grades of Vaishnava kings. And the transcendental king isn't moved by passion, they're controlled by Dharma, and because they're controlled by Dharma, it indicates a submission to the source of Dharma, submission to the personality of God. At least this is a Vaishnava. They're not just following Dharma because you're supposed to follow Dharma, they're following Dharma because of their submission to the personality of God, who is the source of Dharma. That's Daivi Varnashram. They're submissive fully to the personality of Godhead, and thereby they're controlled. Externally by Dharma, they will not transgress Dharma. The higher principle is they will not transgress acting according to the will of the Supreme Lord. Their senses and their mind and everything is controlled by the Supreme Lord. So how's it work? Arjuna is being incited, Prabhupada explains this, to fight. And there's commentators, including Mahatma Gandhi, who rejects Krishna. If there is such a person as Krishna who was agitating Arjuna's mind to fight, then I reject, I stop being a Hindu. This is in his Bhagavad Gita commentary. But Prabhupada explains, Krishna was agitating Arjuna's mind to fight. But it's not like, you know, lose track of Dharma and just get angry. That kind of, because how are you going to fight unless you're angry? Fight to death. How are you going to do that? You can't. Unless you're angry, then if you're angry, you can do it. So what's this transcendental anger? Then it's something induced by the Supreme Lord, which is very different than the other kind of anger. The other kind of anger is when it's controlled by it. And the transcendental anger is one utilizes it. Now it's easy to say, it's another thing, to be on the platform of Krishna consciousness where you can utilize something. One of my my favorite examples is Hanuman. When he was searching for Sita, couldn't find Sita, looked high and low and everywhere in Lanka. I can't go back and tell Ram I couldn't find Sita. I can't find Sita. So he didn't get depressed or feel, you know, bummed out or self-deprecation. He just became more determined. I'll look again. And he found Sita. Because everything is dependent upon Krishna. So because of Krishna's arrangement, he couldn't find Sita, and then because of Krishna's arrangement, he could find Sita. So we just remain determined. And so forth. The whole Mahabharata and the battle in Ramayana that the kids love, boys at least, it's filled with this chivalry thing. And, you know, chivalrous talk between one and another. Bhagavatam, and Krishna's fighting with this one, that one, chivalrous talk. But that's, in Krishna's case, it's transcendental. In the other case, it's driven by false ego and the mode of passion. So it's for those that aren't devotees, it's not just only mysteries. As far as they're concerned, it's mumbo jumbo. Transcendental anger. So the King Rahugana wasn't in the transcendental anger position. He was in the prompted by the mode of passion position. Although he was virtuous. Obviously he's virtuous. Because look at how he responds when Jedbara speaks. Or turn it around. Why did Jedbara speak? Because before he wasn't speaking. Deaf and dumb. Saying nothing to nobody. Even his father. But he spoke to Rahugana because he recognized there's a qualified person. I'll talk to him. It'll go in. Even though he's like ruled by passion. It didn't do it right away. But eventually he gave this narration about basically, King, you're a fool. You think that you're the body. Because you think you're the body, you think you're the controller. You have this Ishwara Bhava, but you know, you got it wrong. And you know, the soliloquy is far greater than Shakespeare. It's transcendental teaching to a qualified king. And he gets it. Although, shortly before that, he's angry at the very same person. And generally speaking, when you're angry, you can't hear anything. Just hear the anger raging in your mind and your relationships with others, everything gets lost. So Jedbharata is not controlled by lamentation, feeling hurt by harsh words, and the king is controlled by passion, although he has the element of knowledge of the Vedas, knowledge of the duties of a king, and so forth. Certain political science and managing the affairs of state. But obviously, his capacity isn't that of Maharaj Yudhisthira, but his capacity isn't the same as Jarasandha or something. He's an elevated person. But because of the strong influence of the mode of passion, he's speaking harsh things. And coming up, he's going to speak even more harsh things. First, it's going to teach you a lesson you'll never forget. Here's the stick. I'm the king. How Jed Bharat responds is very interesting. No, he just removes the stick. My knowledge. So how does this apply to us? Well, one thing is we have a nice role model. He's not a perfected king, but he's an elevated king. And we have a perfected Vaishnava Brahmana. Of course, a perfected Vaishnava Brahmana might have spoken up earlier than when Jad Bharat spoke. So in other words, we don't just, it's not, there's only one response when people are harsh with their speech. You just remain silent and carry on. That's certainly an option, because names will never hurt you. But at least in the, so one can go beyond that and speak something, but if one speaks something, it should be from that position of neutrality, from the position of service. And the speaking can be strong, or the speaking can be mild, or the speaking can be instructive, or the speaking can be suggestive, or according to the circumstance, and according to your capacity to choose the right modality of speaking if you choose to speak. And sometimes you just tolerate, carry on. For sure you carry on. So how, what the response is then is based for Vaishnava is based upon service. What's the appropriate service? Given the situation, given my capacity and so forth. And how to know how to do that is dependent upon Krishna. So by no means should thought of Krishna be departed from. Either this end, just feel bad and sad, or feel on that end angry and agitated. What's the appropriate pleasing Krishna in this circumstance method or approach? We look for that intelligence to guide our devotion, as we discussed on Tuesday evening. Bhakti is guided by buddhi. We need spiritual intelligence. We need Krishna to guide us how to direct our mood of devotion properly. Or dependent upon Krishna. You stay in that position, dependent upon Krishna, whether you say something or say nothing. That's what we discussed yesterday. You don't lose or abandon your Krishna consciousness like this. Jad Bharat was a Brahmana. He can't behave like a Sudra. Even he's carrying a palanquin like a Sudra, he can't behave like a Sudra. He can't abandon his quality. And so there, therefore the execution of duties between one and another, the Shudra and the Brahmana, there's some inconsistency. In practical terms, in modern day ISKCON, there's persons with different qualities. Not too many that are highly brahminical, but difference in quality. And that means that then, as this purport is saying, some inconsistency in the execution of duties. So one of the things advisable is you appreciate, oh, there's a nice manner of, or mode of serving Krishna, according to that person's nature. That need to be critical of them or envious of them, depending upon the circumstance. It's just a different way of serving Krishna. and respect the differences and carry on, keeping Krishna at the center. And if there is some speech that's appropriate, you take the prompt from Krishna. Here's the speech that's appropriate. And consider carefully what's going to be the impact on others when I speak the truth. Just so this cover this and people end. A very important lesson, very important lesson, the first lesson of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam on this same verses that we quoted yesterday, the Krishna Katha message, where Shaunaka, leading the sages hearing from Sutta, wants to hear Krishna Katha, and Sutta starts speaking about Prikshit and the Pandavas. And the first, the subject or the action item is Ashvatthama has killed the sleeping sons of Draupadi. One of the sons is Arjuna's son. And when Arjuna comes to know, he takes this passionate sounding challenge. I take a vow, I will bring Ashvatthama back, and when you're performing the funeral for your five sons, you can stand on his head, severed from his body, just as he severed the heads of your sons. And he goes chasing after Ashvatthama, and he brings Ashvatthama back, and he's ready to sever his head right in front of Draupadi. And Draupadi says, don't do it. And his elder brother, who he would never disobey, says, don't do it. Krishna says, do it. Bhima says, do it. Now, how are you supposed to satisfy all these different people? Because Bhima is his elder brother too. Arjuna is the middle brother of the five. So one of the lessons, he's expected to, he's Arjuna. He, like the rest of the Pandavas, he always abides by Dharma. He's not going to deviate from Dharma. So then he's got these contradictory instructions. How was he supposed to do? It's just like when Vishvamitra requests Ram to kill Tataka and explains that she's a female demoness, he counsels Ram, saying, don't think you can't kill her because she's a woman, because in the Vedas is enjoined that you can't kill a woman. Please understand, there's another principle, and any other principle supersedes that principle. You can kill her. It gives scriptural examples. So the Valmiki Ramayana says Ram was perturbed because there, you know, he can't deviate from Dharma. But then finally the position he accepts is, my father said to do whatever instruction, whatever bidding he receives. From Vishvamitra. So I have to. Even if I'm comfortable or not comfortable, I must follow. Because it's my father's command to do whatever you say, so I'm ready. He gets over that hesitation on a higher principle. So in this case with Arjuna, he's supposed to kill Ashvatthama and not kill Ashvatthama at the same time. How do you do that? How do you do the right thing. That's one thing to understand what is Dharma, what's the right thing in this circumstance. And then, how do you do it in the right way? Because the concern, when Draupadi said, don't kill him, it was, well, you took the vow in my name, you promised me, if I release you from the promise, you're off the hook. You're not violating a promise you gave me because I'm releasing you from that promise. But why is she feeling that way? Besides her compassion, you know, she's a transcendentalist. Like Judd Bart, she knows she's not the body, or Ashwatthama's not his body. And by laws of Dharma, someone that's done what Ashwatthama has done, it's the proper judgment, death penalty. Heinous, cold-blooded murder of five young boys when they're asleep. Death penalty. That's Dharma. That's what, and what Krishna said. If you think you can't kill him because he's a Brahmana, well, that's superseded by the fact that his behavior was not at all Brahmana. He's a Brahma Bandhu. You won't get the sin of killing a Brahmana, so that obstacle is taken away. But Draupadi wanted that her dear friend Kripi not have to suffer. Because if Ashwatthama was killed, who would suffer the most? The mother of Ashwatthama. And the husband of Ashwatthama's mother, Kripi, he had been killed during the battle. She had already been troubled by the death of her husband, and now the death of her son, she had no protector. She should not have to experience that. So when we make decisions about what to do or what to say, besides, you know, is it the right thing or not the right thing, that's important, we also have to consider, who's going to be affected by speaking this, or by not speaking this, or speaking in this way, or speaking in that way? It's mature. So Dharma that's mature is, we consider, how is this going to impact others? And that's going to decide whether we speak or not. Not just Dharma, it's the right thing to do, I gotta speak. Or do something. In this case, Judd Bharat decided he would not speak anything. And then it happens again and he decides he's going to speak something. And the speaking something decision is not, this guy's too much, I'm going to smack him with my sharp intellect. Not that at all. Just what's best for the circumstance and how others will be affected by speaking or not speaking, or doing or not doing, or whatever. That's maturity doesn't come easy. It requires purification and this contemplation of what does Krishna want? Bhakti. And Krishna will give the intelligence. This is what I want. Not just impulse. We have to be true to ourselves, we also have to be true to Krishna and the relationship with Krishna. We have our nature, we can't just not be, have our nature. How is that to be directed? Buddhi. We require Krishna's direction. Okay, so any thoughts, discussion? You have a comment?
I have a clarification.
You have a what? Clarification? Okay. So speak slowly, please. Comment?
The comment is like you were talking about the examples of transcendental and handling, like Hanuman example.
Yeah.
So I was just remembering Mahaprabhu's transcendental anger, like when he was here about Nityananda Mahaprabhu was
surrounded
by the things so much. And also I was remembering Krishna.
Speak slowly.
And also
speak slowly.
Also, I was remembering Krishna taking the wheel in his hand in the battlefield against Bhishma.
Yeah.
So that also was remembering like comparing his transcendental and so it is such a thing. My comment is, sorry, my clarification is so regarding this Jagatara. He's totally self-realized, so he's not reactive to King Raghunath's whatever his sarcastic statement. But and also we know that in the NOD that we in the nectar of devotion that he is basically he studied the principles of Bhakti Yoga and Hatha Yoga and other yogas and other things. So when we study the difference, so we just. Talk about the feelings because it's not in other thing. What we practice is we have the transcendental feeling to express this bhava, as you said in the class. So means Jadaparat should be executing, should be showing transcendental feeling also, right? He must be having the transcendental feeling.
Transcendental
feeling.
Feeling.
Emotions. Yeah.
Why not?
So far we have seen that he is not reactive or not on the bodily conception.
Yeah.
But he must be carrying the transcendental emotions of feelings within him, right?
Yeah.
But practically, if we also understand that this is all body, and this it's but sometimes in the work area, in other places, we have to be reactive. Otherwise,
no, you don't have to be reactive. You have to be a servant, not reactive. Reactive means the motive nature over there prompts something over here and I do something because I'm reactive to the motive nature that prompts something. That's reactive. This triggers that and I react. We don't have to be reactive. We have to be active. In service to Krishna, guided by the intelligence that Krishna gives his devotees. You just have to become a devotee that's acting in service to Krishna. And not, and otherwise, not. Not very advanced devotees.
Yeah.
That's basically. So we have to practice according and strive according to principle and nice example and keep trying. Okay. You're going to stay on the same point again. Or you're going to go to another one. You cultivate. You cultivate. Abhyasa. Just like japa. We cultivate. Remaining attentive to the name. And the mind goes. We cultivate attentiveness. We cultivate. Acting, not reacting. We cultivate acting in each of the circumstances of life in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. We may not know what that is. And we may get this really strong reactive push. We just don't act on that reactive push. We strive, cultivate, wanting to remain in my relationship with Krishna and looking for some, signal from Krishna that's appropriate here. We just keep cultivating that. biblical statement is, seek and you shall find. You ask that question, and you're more likely to get an answer than if you don't ask the question. Because Krishna could be screaming, you know, turn right. And you're not asking the question, so you don't even hear it. Because you're too busy reacting. So just go to that neutral space, mode of goodness space, where you're reflecting. This is this, with detachment. This is the circumstance. What would be most pleasing to Krishna in this circumstance? And I want to be in that mood, whatever it is that I do or don't do, I want to be in that mood of seeking the happiness of Krishna through my speech or action, or the non-speech and non-action.
Is it okay?
All kinds of things are okay. Go ask Krishna, is this okay? if clarity is not there, pause and give it some time. There's a good response. Because I don't just rush in and react. Some circumstances require immediate, and some circumstances don't. But if you do the immediate and you got it wrong, it can make the situation worse. So, that's life. You have to cultivate our relationship with Krishna. That's our devotional life. Okay, Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.